Welcome back, weary travelers, to the fourth episode of Recorder on the Wall. I am your host, Pete, and you remember Drew?
I am Drew.
Apparently he has turned into a walking, talking tree at this point. So, yeah, it's a Guardians reference. And we have new with us. We have new with us. We have someone new. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Katie. I've been a Red Bull fan since I was a child, and I bothered them with emails until they let me on the podcast.
Yeah, I about did the same.
Actually, folks, that does work. If it hasn't already been obvious through what social stuff I have engaged, if you want to be on the show and you're a fan, we can make room for you. So we encourage you to contact us. Just don't be abusive about it.
Oh, that was my problem. That's why it took so long.
All right, we'll go with that. So we... Jeremy and I figured out, Jeremy will not be joining us for this episode, unfortunately. He called me last minute and said he has an allergy headache and can't record. So, I hope you feel better, Jeremy. We'll see you on the next episode. So, we figured out we're going to look at Metameo next, since it is the direct sequel to the first book, although the third book published, because it involves much of the same characters, and we kind of wanted to see how... Brian Jakes would do with working with the same character set. Because if you look at the publishing order, Mossflower is actually second, which has its own set of characters, including Martin. So, but we're going with Metameo. So before we begin, Katie, since you're new, why don't you tell us how did you find the franchise and what was your experience with it?
Well, I was about 10, I think, and my mom used to, on her way home from work, get me audiobooks from the library I might as well just say it now. I'm blind. I was born blind. So I either read Braille or I listen to audiobooks. Either one's great. I love them both. So she got me the first Redwall book, and I read it, and I loved it. I was like, I want another one. And so I read Martin the Warrior, had my heart physically ripped out of my body, and cried for like a week. And then I was like, nope, I'm done. I don't want to read any more of these. But then sometime, I think in high school, I started again, and I finished all the rest of them. And I really do love the audiobooks just because Brian Jakes has a lovely narrating voice, and they're full cast. And so, yeah, but I do have Braille copies of all of them as well. So I'm kind of a super awesome nerd fan.
I didn't know that Brian Jakes actually did the audiobooks.
Oh, yeah.
As far as I know, he did most of them, if not all.
I think all but about five of them, and yeah, his voice is just, he's like my British grandfather or something. It makes me think of home and warmth and comfort and everything, so that's me nerding out on his voice.
Okay. Did you ever get a chance to meet him in person?
No.
Go to like a book signing?
No, I didn't, but yeah, I really wish I would have got the chance. That's awesome.
Yeah, he came to St. Louis, of all places, which is my home city, and it's just like, oh, I'm going to go. And
right.
He was hilarious. I mean, the guy knew how to work an audience, tell jokes, kept referring to the United States as the colonies. So
nice.
Yeah, because I think Marl Fox was just about due out at the time, and he's like, but for the colonies, you'll get it 3 months later. Serves you right for throwing RT in Boston Harbor.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
The Grudge 200 years later.
Yeah, you played up for a joke. But yeah, it was a really kind of cool thing to see. So what order did you hit Metameo in? And this is for everybody.
I honestly don't remember. It's been a really long time ago.
I think it was honestly I read it right after Redwall because I knew it was the sequel, and I would always, I remember distinctly, it was the bottom shelf of my library's fiction section, and so I just kind of took them out in order.
There you go. I think this was third for me. I hit the series at Martin the Warrior, and then did Redwall, and then... Well, when we come to that book, I'm gonna touch on this in better depth. But the long and short of it is, before you know how big of a thing this is, the one big event everyone references, yeah, it didn't hit you as hard. So,
Yep.
But that's a story for another day. So this one, yeah, I read it third, and this, I think this is one of, I wouldn't say favorites, but definitely one of the ones I came back to the most. Because I kind of like the older Matthias.
I like the Sparrows, and I'm kind of sad that they never really make another appearance outside of Redwall and Metameo.
And their role in this book, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but it's really reduced compared to Redwall.
Yeah.
They're there, they have a role, but, you know, they talk less. That's the best way to put it. So, basic plot overview. This book, as we said, is one of the few direct sequels we do get in the franchise. And it takes place, I think it's 2 years later, officially.
Always confuses me. Like, his use of seasons, I think later in the series, he goes like one season equals 1 year. But I think at this point, and maybe up to like Salamandastron, they were supposed to be more than a year because Mara was adopted like 5 seasons ago and she seems to be like a teen creature or something. Mm-hmm. So that always kind of confused me as how he allotted the seasons in the lives of the creatures. I don't think he completely figured it out yet.
No, it's one of the points of the series doesn't really clarify on purpose. It confused me the heck when I read through the series too. Like, how long is a season, respectively?
Yeah, so I'm like, wait, is Metameo like 6 while this is going on? Because if you say it's been 8 seasons since the war, and I don't know, he might have been born a season or something later, so he'd be like 6 or 7, that seems really young to me.
Yeah.
But mice grow faster.
That is true.
Right.
That's kind of what I always assumed with it, but I never actually did any research on that.
No. Definitely. So, yeah, outright told this place is pretty much 2 years later after Redwall, and for the most part, the life has gone on. I don't think the vermin population has spawned from their insect overlords, as we joke about in the episode 0. life has definitely gone on. Everybody's grown a little older, and we get some new introductions. Now, for this first third of the book, I am covering the kids reintroduced again, even if they were in the first book, mostly because when we last saw them, they were pretty much toddlers at best.
Right.
So we have, within the Redwall community, we have Maomao himself, who is a brat. I mean, they don't make any. Let's be honest from the start, and they don't. Our author doesn't make any threat. The guy is a spoiled brat.
Yeah.
Yep. Thanks to some indulgent treatment by the Abbey dwellers.
Yeah. So we have Tim and Tess, who. While Tess definitely gets some characterization in this first one, Tim is just kind of there. So.
Yeah.
Tess is definitely, she's definitely hitting that point where she's starting to mature and calls Metameo out a couple of times, but at the same time, she's just as much involved in the troublemaking in the early part of the book.
I was going to say, she seems like a mischief maker as well, especially with the wasp sting thing that she does.
Yeah. That was one of the funnier moments.
Oh, yeah.
We'll talk about that. We have Sam, who doesn't shut up now.
Not so silent anymore, Sam.
No. He's definitely the oldest of the kid group that we follow around. But I would say closest... Again, we can't really gauge the age thing here. I would say he's the closest to being a teenager.
So. Right.
We have Cynthia Bankful, and...
Yeah, Vol.
Yes, I know. I know she's supposed to be purposely annoying because she doesn't realize what's going on. But she's still annoying.
Yeah.
We
and
love Bulls.
So what was the... Colin from the Redwall book was the same, like, just kind of whiny and annoying.
Yeah, he was. We have new... And then we have, outside the Redwall crowd, we have Jubilation, a.k.a. Jube. It's a male hedgehog who's just kidnapped from his family as the slavers go by. So, I don't have a lot to say about him, really.
I like Jube.
Yeah, he seems to be cheerful, you know.
We are told that he's the only boy among 10 sisters. So.
The I like how that was relevant to his piece.
Yes.
No. But he seems to harp on it, so it bears mentioning. So. And then lastly, I have no idea if this is the right pronunciation, so bear with me. Alma?
Alma, that's how the audiobook says it, yeah.
Okay, Alma. Our first, like, juvenile badger we've ever seen, if we're following publishing order. So
yes.
We've seen Constance, Drew's favorite, for this book.
Yeah!
This book.
She's awesome. I love Constance.
We haven't touched Mossflower in the show, but there was two badgers in that one. I can't remember their names, because it's been forever and a day since I watched that.
It'd be Bella, Bella of Brockhall, mm-hmm. and her father, Boar the Fighter.
Thank you. So yeah, Alma's the first juvenile badger we've seen, and she's got a bit of her father in her at some points, certainly.
Very fierce at times.
Yeah, especially when we cover the newt, so.
Yes.
I forgot to write it down. I'm going to write him down real quick. So yeah, that's under the kids. Did I miss anybody?
I don't think so.
Nope, I don't think so. Well, I guess Vitch would be one of the villains, but I think he's also relatively young.
We'll catch him in a bit. We're still on the hero side for the moment.
Uh-huh.
Then also on the hero side among adults, we have Orlando the Axe, who, yeah. Our very first introduction is that he's already on his rampage of revenge, and he's tracking the villain down to make him into a rug.
Yeah, I think there's some blood wrath going on there, definitely.
Yeah. And we're told even for badgers, he's pretty darn big, and he's carrying a massive double-sided battle axe. So, not one to mess with.
Yep.
And then also new introduced is Cheek. And this is an otter kid that the hero group randomly finds, and he just stays with them the whole time. And his character progression is out like the other kids. He starts off kind of annoying, just basically a kid. By the end of this, we're going to see him into a little bit more wizened.
Yep, I always thought he was kind of cute. Like, unlike, you know, Cynthia or Colin, I think he just had some mischief in his personality, and he could be annoying at times, but...
And like every other, a lot of the other child characters we will come into this series, he is naturally an orphan. And he doesn't have a sister to get him to the Abbey.
Yeah.
I'm not good as it truly is.
Cinematic.
So, on the villain side, we have a couple of new faces. Because as we all learned in the Great War 8 seasons
new
ago,
faces.
Mostly. The villain side, we have, and this is just book one here. We're not covering books two and three villains here. But first of all, we have Vitch, who you mentioned earlier. And he's kind of a undersized rat, we're basically told.
Yes, he could pass as a mouse. And I just want to say the guy who voices him in the audiobook is fantastic, because he just sounds like a little whiny, like you kind of want to smack him every time he speaks. So well done there, voice actor guy.
So kind of the Starscream of the bunch, except he's not trying to take over. So any of you who are out there who are a Transformers fan, you probably got a chuckle at that. So.
I just laugh like I get it.
Oh, okay. We have I'm not going to go individually into every horde member that Sligar has, because he doesn't have a horde. He has maybe a team about of a dozen. I ballparked it. But early on, one of them has the misfortune to complain bitterly about the job he's been hired to do, and Sligar outright murders him.
Yeah, that turned out not to be such a great plan to complain.
Yeah. Vermin HR is not exactly the highest paid department.
No.
So. No. I mean, don't get me wrong, Clooney was not above killing subordinates if it served a greater purpose. But Sligo is more. He likes to be a little bit more cruel since it's in his name.
Yes.
So, and yes, Slagar the Cruel is the villain for the book.
Who we have definitely never seen before, ever.
No.
No. Completely new. I don't know what you're talking about.
Weird looking fox.
Yeah. He's in a mask. And instead of singing, Andrew Lloyd Webber songs and kidnapping maidens, he's a slaver and he likes to kidnap kids to take slaves. And there's definitely a touch of crazy here. I mean, Clooney sure was a villain, and he definitely started to lose it towards the end of the Book of Redwall, but he was more of anything, he was just a conqueror. Sligar's nuts. I mean, and we can see it from the start.
Yeah, there's not really a higher purpose there. Even, no spoilers, but even towards the end, his end game, I don't understand what he's really getting out of this, besides personal satisfaction.
Right.
Yeah, we're outright told his motive is revenge.
Revenge.
Because, hey, it's a Tuesday. that's kind of our, and like I said, I'm not going to go into his gang because I don't want to say that they're not memorable, but they're not.
They're not.
They're not kind of recycled from Clooney's Horde with different names, it seems like.
Entirely possible, yeah. We are told that at least one of them was actually part of a traveling theater troupe before, and I can't remember who, but it's part of the plot.
Oh, I can't either. Skin paw. No, right. I don't know. Anyway.
This is why it's not memorable, unfortunately. And that leads into the next segment, which we'll call up again.
How anthropomorphic are they?
Yeah, there's definitely disagreements between both the book and its art here.
Yeah. Which,
is there?
Which book?
So I've never seen the art. You guys think I have to describe it?
Yeah, of course. I'm sorry. I didn't realize that.
No, it's okay. I'm curious.
If you look into the original U.S. cover, they're straight up feral looking. Yeah, they've got some scraps of cloth on, but Slagger's walking around on all four paws.
Ah, okay.
Really?
So.
Look up the version.
Here, up. Let me send it to Skype imaging system.
Hello. Ooh.
Yeah, and the UK cover is a little bit more ambiguous. But in story, yeah, they're definitely anthropomorphic. Our first introduction to Orlando is he's walking through the forest with an axe slung across his back. You could make an argument that, yeah, okay, he's walking on four paws and the axe is still on his back, but no, I read it as anthropomorphic. So.
Yeah, definitely in my book version, it has all of the mice chained up on a bridge, but it's just their front paws that are chained, and they're on their back paws, and there's who I assume is Matthias holding a sword. So, half and half? It's always the question, yeah. Every single book.
And even the franchise in general likes to tease fans about this. If you go on the Redwall's official page, and I think it's one of the frequently asked questions, and they're just like, I think their answer is, it's reader's interpretation. So.
Lame. Cop out.
Ooh. Ooh, this man.
So, the story begins, and we're up. Pretty much straight up with Orlando the Axe on his already walking along on tracking the fox, and then we alternate between the villains and the good heroes for a bit, until the main Midsummer Feast. We're introduced to Madame Mayo, who, as aforementioned, is an absolute brat.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Because he believes himself above doing menial house chores.
What was his voice actor like, Katie?
He sounded kind of whiny toward the beginning, and then, you know, as the book progressed and he matured, his voice got a little bit deeper. But I do enjoy the guy who plays Matthias. I think he's actually Brian Jake's son, but his voice is lovely as well. Yeah, he's great.
Cool. And, yeah. And we see Matthias has definitely matured a bit.
Right.
There's a point he's out.
So, sorry, I was just wondering, with Madame Mayo, why didn't Matthias and or Cornflower make him do chores and stuff? Like, why did they let him grow up this way?
Right. I mean, presumably he's got a room that has to be cleaned at one point or another.
Right. I mean, I'm not cleaning my kids' room. I mean, come on. They can do that themselves.
I think it's more of a situation of communal parenting for all the Dibbins. And mm-hmm. I've never seen, like, parents really go off on their kid. It's kind of just an all-for-one. And so if everybody else was spoiling him, then, you know, maybe, like, one out of 20 times you would have to do something for Matthias and Cornflower, but that's about it.
That's true.
So, you can definitely tell Matthias is definitely restraining himself from laying a hand on his son when he dresses him down, but he figures some manual labor will set him straight. So, but we're showing that Metameo is not above some mischievous point and can be easily tempted by the other kids F we earlier mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Right.
One of his chores is to go down to the cellars where we find Ambrose Sprike. More on him in a moment.
He's great. I love him.
And I think his drinking problem got worse in this book.
Yes.
Yeah, he's just KO'd in the cellars at this point.
Like Hagrid from the Harry Potter series. So he's kind of drinking.
Yeah. So, Ambrose is... I don't think he's never not drunk. At one point, Menemeo sent down to the cellars to get more drinks, and the other kids are down there, and they pretty much halfway kidnap him into not doing that and drink the strawberry cordial down there themselves.
Oh, twist his arm, man. Twist his arm.
They don't have to do it that hard.
I think that's a really good point. I really like Menemeo as a character, as the titular character of this book. Mostly because there is such development in him throughout this entire novel. And so I think it's good that he showed that even when he is, at the beginning, reprimanded, this doesn't change him all that much. But
no,
he's still a child. You know, he's still got a lot to learn. And it's going to take a hard lesson before he gets there.
Right.
Yeah. What else? And we're introduced to Vetch, who is not a rat. Totally not a rat. I don't know what you're talking about.
Nope.
No. Small mouse. Ugly mouse.
Yeah.
Constance doesn't like him. I trust Constance.
Oh, yeah. Your girl got to do... have a talk with the central character here.
Constance!
Yes. Yep.
One of my favorite characters in this entire series, Mother of All of Redwall. Very fun.
Love her so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the woman who plays her is fantastic, by the way.
I really have to check out this audiobook version.
Yeah, I think there's probably samples up on Audible.
I'm actually, if I can go off on just a small tangent here... I'm
sure.
Actually really glad that they put so much effort into the audiobooks. Since Brian Jakes originally wrote the Redwall book for A School for Blind Children,
right.
And that's why all of the descriptions are so based in touch and feeling in how you know, things smell and how things are laid out in a space.
Yeah, it's very immersive.
I think that's really cool that translates into effort on their part.
Right.
You know, they knew that they'd have an audience.
And I have a few issues, just small issues, with the way that blindness is portrayed in the series. Like, mainly because I wish I had the all-encompassing sensing where food is magical powers, because those sound really cool. And that's not actually how it works.
It's got some form of echolocation.
Yes.
Yeah. And let's be honest here, the food porn in this novel is turned up to 11. I mean, the original Redwall was good, but we spend well over several pages just describing what's on the table for the feast.
Do you guys know about the background on why he described the food so well?
Why?
I know George R. R. Martin, but not, no.
So he grew up, I think it was during World War II, and a lot of things were, he couldn't get access to them when he was a child. And so he was reading these books, and they're like, and then the king and his men came in and had a great feast, and then the end. And he's like, wait, what was the feast? You should describe the feast.
Where was the food? Give me that.
Yeah. So that's why he described in excruciating, mouthwatering detail all of his food.
That is really neat.
I wonder how much of that is true for George R. R. Martin. We're told he's been asked in interviews for the Game of Thrones series why he goes into the great detail. And one, he's trying to set the stage accurately for medieval worlds, but two, he wants to make it's a part of making it real for people.
Right.
So. Just plenty of other things can make it real, George, like when you kill our favorite characters. So.
Yeah,
that's another series.
I stopped reading that series. I could not take the treatment of women and killing off of people. Mm. Anyway.
Absolutely. I know yesterday I saw there was a Reddit post, and it was about if authors did covers of other books, like artists did covers of music, and somebody said, I want to see the George R. R. Martin version of the Redwall series.
Oh, boy.
No.
No. No, thank you.
Thought that would be fantastic.
You only see brutal deaths along the way. Yeah. Moving on. Let's move on from that downer. What else?
So Constance was yelling at Madame Mayo.
Yes, he was. So we spend this inordinate amount of time building up for the feast, including Matthias and the new abbot spending all night to catch a fish. Yeah, was part of it. And I just have, I got this mental image of during the fight of to land this carp, of their little boat being dragged around the entire pond while people are just kind of watching.
Yeah.
Coming out of Looney Tunes.
That is some serious commitment to fish catching.
But in the middle of while we're building up to the feast, we keep flashing back to Slagar, who is describing his master plan of evil.
Yes, Slagar. Very evil.
So the whole plan is to get inside the Abbey as a wandering troop of players and drug them all and take their kids. Even to the point that they would deliberately leave weapons behind. Because they know if they find anything, Matthias is going to chop them to itty-bitty chunks.
And Constance.
Well, there's that too.
Yeah. She's going to throw another table. A bigger table. This one has food on it.
Hey, those glass dishes could cause some damage.
Mm-hmm.
They could. So, we're also, the slavers also ask their boss, hey, who are we selling these kids to? And they're like, the Kingdom of Marcissus, or
Malcaris, I believe.
Malcaris, yes.
Malcaris. And, we do get a two-page chapter of Malcaris, just kind of a Family Guy cutaway. And,
oh, right, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
It's like, we get introduced to Malcaris, who just asks how his kingdom is going, and he's his lackey, who is a Starscream type, basically says, oh, it's coming along, but we're kind of running out of slaves. Because none of our usual slaver clients have been by in a while.
Wah, wah.
And this great King Marcellus, or...
Macarus.
Thank you. He says, oh, yeah, just work him harder. Oh, yeah, like, that's going to work out for you there, buddy.
Yeah,
they're not going to totally rise up and conquer you one day because you're oppressing them so hard. That's never going to happen.
Oh.
No.
Slagar makes his initial ground base at St. Ninian's Church. Where have I heard that before?
Oh, my God. Burn it down.
Not yet.
Six books for that.
Even though no one's inhabiting it at this point. So, after the war, everyone who was living at the church moved to Redwall.
It's got bad juju.
It probably smelled really bad, you know?
Yeah. So, Slagar arrives. They get permitted entry. Yeah, great job there, Matthias. And, they drug the Redwallers and take their kids.
Except for plot twist, three creatures did not end up drinking, and so they had some witnesses.
Yep. We had Mrs. Bankvoll, who's killed.
Sad.
We have Friar Hugo, who's killed.
Also sad.
And John Churchmouse, the father of Tim and Tess, and he's a scratch. It's just a head wound. I'm sure he'll be completely fine.
That man can't die. In the first book, didn't he get stabbed and, like,
That was Cornflower's father, Mr.
Field Mouse, Church Mouse.
Same thing. Well, in the TV series, it's the same thing.
Yeah, the TV series does combine the characters, but
it's kind of incestuous if you think about it, because...
Yeah.
Gang Game of Thrones here.
Yep.
I was just going to make a Lion King joke, but that works too, so... Yeah, the more you think about Lion King, the more gross it gets.
Simba.
you're betrothed to this other cub from internally in the pride, and there's only one male around. I've gone cross-eyed.
Thank you for ruining my favorite childhood movie.
Keep it in the family.
Yeah. Kids are kidnapped. The Red Wars wake up, and it takes them a long time to realize the kids are missing.
Yeah, I would think.
Anyone else knows this?
Yeah, I would think the first thing they would do would be like, "Where are our children? Like, is no
kid?
Children." Yeah.
So worst parents ever. It takes them at least, I would ballpark, an hour. Like, they're just kind of taking stock of what's going wrong.
Right.
And admittedly, they are distracted by two deaths and one grievous wounding. Sure, I'll grant them that.
I guess we don't really know what the after effects of the drugs were. Maybe the drugs kind of made them feel a little hazy or something. I don't know. Yeah.
But, they realize, where are our kids? So,
yep.
And no... We don't have a chance for a taken speech, because that would be awesome. So,
I will find you.
Yeah. Let's see. So, yeah, they're like, we should probably search for them. Oh, it's pouring down rain. Crap. Like, it's just one of those torrential monsoons that Britain gets.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. It doesn't get monsoons. So, yeah, the Red Wars are delayed from catching up, and, meanwhile, the kids wake up in the fox's custody. He's like, yeah, slaves now. This is gonna be fun. And
hooray!
They show that Sligar's pretty talented with a series of bullas. So.
Yep.
If anyone tries to run away, he's gonna break their legs.
And then he'll have to dump you in the ditch because a crippled slave is no... What did he say? Like, no... You can't have
not
a crippled slave. Yeah, or something like that.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, yeah, the kids take it well.
Yes.
Cynthia Bankful.
Totally unfazed by everything.
Totally fine. Cool
and
polite.
And they get a day's journey in, and Sigurd's like, "Hey, I want to Maname. I want to talk to you alone for a second." Pulls him aside, and he tells him his backstory. But before he does that, he takes off his hood. And I made a Phantom of the Opera joke earlier, but it's pretty apropos.
Mm-hmm.
Because we find out, Sligar has one side of his face looks like it's been through a meat grinder.
Yeah, he kind of has a zombie face.
Yeah, or Two-Face from Batman, if you will. That's another popular reference, probably easy to make. He's like, yeah, your father's responsible for this. It's like, my dad bit you? I was just No, that snake did that, but your father's totally responsible for chasing me out into the wilds.
Even though he wasn't even there.
Yeah, wasn't my dad with the sparrows at that time? Shut up, you!
Don't poke holes in my villain speech.
You even know his dad.
Yeah, Manameo does poke holes in his speech, like, we don't tend to take prisoners. At Redwall, we kind of heal people. It's like, shut up, I know I'm right.
Yep. Like, arguing with the wall.
And then we find out, oh, by the way, tell your friend the squirrel that the son of Sela is the one who took you. Like, I did not see that coming.
Whoa.
Yeah, to be fair, if you read the original Redwall and got here, you probably thought Chicken Hound was dead.
Right.
But, no. He managed to survive a snake bite. And I'm sure the toxins did nothing to his head.
Nope.
He's all better now, right?
He seems like a reasonable fellow.
Not hearing voices or seeing visions, I'm certain.
Nope.
Because, and he outright said, Sagar's like, yeah, this is all about revenge. And Sam's like, oh, he's Chicken Hound. Man, that guy was a jerk.
Yeah.
And he kind of killed Methuselah, so. So yeah, we have a returning villain for once. Is there any of those in the series at all?
No, they all either perish or exile.
Right.
Or I think maybe one or two turn to the side of good. So.
Yeah, and he was a secondary villain of the first Redwall book, and now he's like the main villain. He got promoted at Vermin HR.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
From an HR, coming in clutch.
Yep.
There you go. So, Matthias and the other group finally set out from the Abbey, and he leaves his armor and shield behind because it would slow him down too much.
I mean, that's okay. Fair.
Yeah, I mean, I get that.
I mean, I buy the armor that we never saw in the Redwall book.
But the shield?
That's suddenly... The shield... okay, fine. I'll buy it, but that shield only got one book.
Yeah, but Orlando's carrying a big axe. Like,
well, he is bigger than Matthias, though, to be fair. Like, he's a giant badger.
He's a giant... Suck it up, Matthias. Constance wouldn't have this problem.
Nope.
To be fair, if he was walking through the forest in giant armor, it'd sound like clang, 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 clang.
Yep.
And they'd hear him coming.
Yeah, because Orlando's a sneaky fellow.
So, yeah, they manage to catch up. They find Sheik, who says, oh, no, you've went in the total wrong direction. They actually went south, and you've been going north. Have fun.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, Sligar deliberately laid a false trail. Buy himself more time.
Which is pretty smart. I mean, gotta give it to him. He may be crazy, but he's not, you know, an idiot.
Well, compared to most of the other villains, he's not out to have, like, a giant castle or rule or anything. He's a slaver.
He wants money.
And he's not gonna stay around and fight a war he know he can't win.
Yep.
So.
What do animals even do with money? Is there commerce in this universe?
I don't know.
We're getting ahead of ourselves, but in book three, I don't think he's even paid in anything.
No, and they're just like, good job.
Favors to be owed. Yeah.
I think they make him ruler of the land above ground or something, and so I guess he wants land.
We'll get to that in time.
In the TV show for Redwall, I think the only time money was ever even mentioned was when there's this spice trader that comes in, which I think was just a TV show original.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah.
It was very weird. And they're like, how do we pay you for this? And he's like, oh, you know, it's a few copper pieces or something.
Fligar was voiced by Tim Curry, which is awesome. Like, he was really good. I enjoyed him a lot.
Oh, Matthias, you all float down here.
You all float down here.
I watched it again recently.
Ah, I want to see it.
Oh, they're so incredibly cheesy. I love them so much.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so the chase is on. That's going to cover pretty much most of this book.
Right.
And the kids get a couple of chances to escape. Their first one is with a neutral character, Skirl, I think his name is.
Yeah, the little newt guy.
Mm.
He's like, yeah, I totally have keys that can totally get you out of these chains if you pay me.
They're like, what do we even have? We're children.
Yeah, dumb children. I'm sorry, but what? How would this work, children? Like, think things through.
So they give him some doodads that they've been holding around. Skrull's like, ha! Totally fooled you. And he runs off.
And then
after taking a rock to the head.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then Alma throws like a big clod of dirt at him and maybe cuts part of his face off or something.
No.
I don't remember.
it's just a clod of dirt. It's not going to do any lasting damage, but he's just like, screw you guys, I'm out. And that only for Skrull to run right into the angry party of parents.
Yeah. Whoops.
Parent party. Do we,
They're like...
Go on. Sorry.
No, go ahead. So yeah, Skrull runs right into the parents, and they're like, hey, that's our kid's stuff. Please tell me where they are. At sword point.
Exactly, in those polite tones.
Where presumed death will follow if he doesn't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Skrull gives the stuff back and says, you went ahead that way. And the chase is still on. And the kids, meanwhile, back in Slengar's group, they manage to break, use a knife that they recovered to, break the lock on their chains and, get the heck out of Dodge.
I want to point out that it was Tess that found the dagger, because, you know... Female characters doing stuff.
Strong female characters. Brian
right.
Jakes.
I mean, even Cornflower, she finds out her son is gone, and she doesn't, you know, she doesn't lose her mind. She doesn't break down in tears. She stands up and right next to her husband, and it's mm-hmm. like, okay, how do we get him back?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, there are probably a few tears, but I mean, I think Matthias was crying too. So
fair point.
Also, I grew up with a dad who, my dad's a big softy, and he cries about everything, and I still think he's a very strong man, so I'm not for this whole men don't cry thing. I'm just like, whatever, cry if you want to, just get stuff done. Don't just...
Well, when they find Father Hugo, it's Basil of all characters who's losing his mind.
That was so sad.
Yeah.
Oh, Basil.
So.
Basil.
Yeah, it is Basil in the audiobook, but...
Oh, Basil then. So the kids escape and, again, reenact Looney Tunes gag. They hide underwater using reeds to breathe through.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So the vermin don't find them and they move on. They're like, oh, man, Slagger's going to kill us. yeah, probably.
Yeah. I wanna point out that with the reed thing, I totally thought that was a legitimate thing. So as a kid, I can't tell you how many times we would go stay by a lake at my grandparents, and there were lots of reeds there. And I was like, somehow this has to work. Like, I just have not found the right reed for this. And so I'm sure my parents found their, like, nearly drowning child a few times. I'm just like, it said it, you could do that.
Well, you got to have the right read.
Yeah, or you could have blamed cartoons, because, again, it's kind of out of a Looney Tunes gag. So yeah, they escaped the room that way, so the kids are loose. Sligar doesn't know about it yet. And the parents find what they think is the vermin hidey hole, and they run into this cave.
Bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I totally forgot when they met up. But before we get to that, we do get Orlando N's introduction to the group when he's trying very hard not to lose his temper at these hedgehogs who keep attacking him.
Right.
Because Jube's father's like, yeah, you totally stole our son. And Badger's like, what?
Like, how do you leap to that logic? Is it just because he's the only creature you've seen? So you're like, obviously he clearly did it.
Yeah, because... he's new. He's got an axe.
Right.
Big dude.
Well, and I mean, later when they mention Sligar, they're just like, oh yeah, him. So they had evidently heard of Sligar. So why wouldn't you just jump to the conclusion
The noted slaver in Mouseflower Wood is probably taking your kid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. Drama. You know, you gotta have some drama, but...
Right. And there's a bit of humor at these... Humor at Orlando... You can just feel Orlando like, oh my god. And he could probably kill all of them, but he's deliberately holding back. Which
right.
For a badger is kind of a thing. So...
Yep.
So, yeah, they meet up, and then, fast forward, they run into the cave, and, no vermin.
Whoops.
Mm-mm.
What's that rumbling noise?
Oh, dear.
And above their heads, Slinger and his crew basically bury them in the cave with a bunch of loose rock.
Yeah.
Oh, that might be a problem.
What amuses me is, I don't know why this amuses me, but afterwards Matthias is like, now what we did seemed like a good idea at the time. Let's just not start blaming. It's like he's justifying it while they're buried alive.
He's like, oh, we're all going to die.
Well, guys, let's just think about this for a second. It's like the person who messes up the group project and then they're like, well, it's just... This was a team effort, and, it went wrong, but we learned from that, and everybody's like, man.
We're all going to die, you jerk. And, the kids, unfortunately, hear their parents running into the cave with angry battle cries, and they're like, oh, it's our parents. Why are they buried in the cave?
That was tragic. Honestly, that was probably one of the most tragic moments in, like, a novel in my childhood. Where they were so close, and Brian
and
Jake said
the kids rushed to unbury them while Slagger's just like, okay, anybody got a cigarette or a cold one? You may just want to pull up and cheer and watch.
Yeah, they're just digging, and you know that it's useless, and they probably know somewhere deep down that it's useless, but they just keep digging even though they're not going to get anywhere. Yeah, it's sad.
And Slagger lets them do it because he's like, they'll tire themselves out.
Yeah.
Oh, Brian Jakes.
Yeah. Dude. Yeah, there is a little bit of George R. R. Martin in this series, isn't there?
Yeah, I would have, he has another series, the Castaway of the Flying Dutchman series, and he does not pull his punches in that series. There's a lot that goes wrong and a lot of... It's not even horrible implications, it's just horrible things that happen to people.
Yeah.
And, he's entirely optimistic about it. I could see that, you know, in these books, I have a feeling that his editors had a little bit to do with toning it down. They're like,
right.
what's the age range on this book again? You know,
I do enjoy that he doesn't patronize children, though. Like, he lets them...
No.
Face death and darkness and everything like that.
Mm-hmm. It's like I said this about another book during the first episode. I said this about the last book, but I think that the biggest thing about Brian Jakes's Redwall series is that it is meant to be. It can be read to children. And in fact, it is a little bit upper difficulty. The words they use aren't, like, hyper complex, but not too many, like, 6-year-old kids would read a 300-page novel.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, he weaves this complete story. He weaves a story that's easy to understand, but the themes are themes that would come across in life, I'll say. You know, it's a fantasy book, but the themes are very realistic. Now, I'm not sure anybody's going around taking slaves nowadays. We sure hope not. Although I think it may be naive to say so. But, you know, he's just, like, every single book, every single theme, every single character they chooses to elaborate on, it's a coming-of-age tale, and most of them are. And I think that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Slager recaptures the kids who you can just, worst part of it is Matameo is just crushed.
Right.
He even says outright on his face that he was so close to getting back to his dad and whatnot, and then at that point, you get this adult moment that even Tess acknowledges privately to herself that Matameo outright says, you should have killed me, Slagar, because now I'm going to kill you.
Right.
And at that point on, Tess is like, he's kind of a little bit more adult now.
Mm-hmm.
So, just took watching his father probably be buried alive to do it.
Yeah, oh man, I just can't not even imagine.
Yeah. Fortunately, Matthias and crew aren't dead, as we mentioned. They do manage to get out, but it takes Martin kicking Matthias in the butt in the dream world to make it happen.
Oh yeah, the appearance of Martin again.
Yep, good old
it's
Martin.
Like, what the hell are you doing? Get up and save your son.
Yep.
Boy.
And they get up, they get some fresh air, and back into the cage because they have been slowly suffocating. Yeah, that's a good thing to put in a kid's book.
This gives me, like, claustrophobia. Yeah. Like, I didn't know I had claustrophobia until I was like, nope.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, the people to dig the main party out happens to be Logalog and the Gusum Shrews.
Hooray!
Yay.
That's another one that it has always annoyed me because it's spelled G-U-O-S-I-M. And in the audiobooks, they pronounce it Gausum. I'm like, that is not how that series of English sounds should go, Jakes. Come on.
Jakes.
Yes. But I'm a court reporter, so I'm kind of an English nut. And so I'm just like, no, that's not how English works. But yeah, it's Gausum in the audiobook, and that will always annoy me forever and always.
Gausum.
Gausum, yep.
But, yeah. So, meanwhile, in the B-plot, because there's always a B-plot in these books.
Yes.
Back at the Abbey, the regular life is going on, and they're just trying to pretend they're not worried to heck about their kids and the other half of the parents who left to get them back. So, but they,
Oh, by the way, what happened to Mr. Squirrel? Did he die? He just disappeared.
Oh, sir, not appearing in this franchise anymore.
Yes.
We joked about him in the Redwall episodes. We called him Sir, not appearing in this book.
Yes.
He went to get
but
cigarettes.
Yeah, he's
and never came
back.
Oh, that's
dark.
Wow.
He probably drank some bad ale from Ambrose Spike.
Yep.
Got poisoned or something. I don't know. Point is, he's not around. That's kind of weird.
A little bit.
And, back in the B-plot, everyone else is like, okay, well, we need to figure out something other than regular Abbey life, and the abbot himself gets a kick in the pants from Martin, saying, hey! And he gives him a riddle to solve.
Yep, so. Plot twist, another riddle.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like this series loves its riddles.
What?
Mm-hmm.
So, and to be fair, they actually make Rollo Bankful not completely annoying.
Yeah, I think he's cute. Also, the woman who plays him in the audiobook has the most adorable baby voice. So, I just imagine him through that lens, and it's adorable.
Yeah. Since his mother was killed, and we don't know where his father went to.
Same place that Mr. Squirrel is.
Mr. Squirrel.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, Cornflower's just pretty much, hey, okay, you're my adopted son now, and has been looking after him. And, they points out that the riddle in question is, find the little folk. And Rollo's like, what about those ants?
Rollo, you genius!
Yeah. So the ants lead them basically to, Abbess Germain's tomb, which, again, we're technically out of publication order since we did Matameo instead of Mossflower next, but... Mm-hmm. Yes, this was a character from Mossflower, who is pretty much the architect of the Abbey.
Well, and I did notice in Redwall, the original Redwall, they called her Sister Germain.
Hmm.
Yes.
But then maybe I think Jake's thought it would be more interesting if she was an abbess instead. So he took some artistic license and decided that she would be an abbess. Which doesn't really bother me that much. Not as much as Gausam.
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 God.
I'm bitter, if you couldn't tell.
Alright. So, they find her tomb, and they find another riddle in, the statue that was left there.
Yes.
The stone tablet.
And the mole, I don't remember his name, but he's, like, the unsung hero of this whole thing, because Rollo, whatever, he's playing with the statue, and all of a sudden, the page, like, the stone page of the riddle comes falling down, and if the mole hadn't, like, dived to catch it, then they wouldn't have a riddle. They just have, like, a shattered stone page thing.
Mm-hmm.
So hooray for the mole.
Yes.
Whose name I can't remember.
I mean, we're gonna get... We're gonna get mole characters who are a little bit more central to the plot, but, yeah, for these first couple of books, they're kind of, they are definitely secondary characters. Allies in the background.
Mm-hmm.
The support.
Mm-hmm. So they find it, basically, her long riddle is, how do you get back to Loamhatch, where they came from?
Why would that have to be a riddle?
Maybe she was just bored, and she was like, you know, I kind of miss Loamhatch, I'm just gonna write a poem about it.
Mm-hmm.
For posterity.
You want to actually... I like the idea that it wasn't really necessarily even supposed to be, like, instruction manual, but it was just like, here's a poem. It's wonderful.
Yeah. I'm getting old, you know. I'm going to write
stuff.
That's
what old people do.
They write poems.
So, yeah, this poem basically is, here you go find Loamhatch. And like, okay, so... The other abbey dwellers put it together, and they're like, oh, well, this is probably where the bad guys are going. We should get this information to Matthias. So the sparrows load up and head south to find them. And our very last bit of book one is this odd raven guy who was listening at the door.
Uh-oh.
Flies off. But I'm sure he's not important.
No.
Yeah, the major B... This is kind of... This part of the B-plot is... I mean, it's important for the book... Ultimately for the book, but... As we're about to see in book 2 and 3, it's... Kind of secondary to what's about to come, and what Cornflower has to... And Constance, excuse me.
Constance!
Lead everybody else through.
Y'all back!
Lead everybody else through.
Yep.
Because it's not like we're about to get another invasion of the Abbey.
No, that doesn't happen.
They're just going to have a summer of peace and plenty while they wait for the children to come home.
Yeah.
Spoilers. Yes, they are about to get invaded again.
Oh. How could this happen to them?
Another time? Yeah.
The thing is, one thing I miss about Jeremy not being here is I am sure he would have a great quote the Raven. He is certainly nice. The pun master. I couldn't think of one, which is why I was just like, darn.
Oh. So, yeah. So, yeah, that is basically the end of book one. So.
Cool.
Other than, I already mentioned that, A, the sparrows are kind of cut back considerably, and B, as we mentioned, Ambrose Bryce's drinking problem has gotten much worse. What else did you guys notice? Any other minor points that stuck in your mind when you were reading this?
Nothing. I thought this was a grand setup, because like you said, it goes down in the following sections. Like, this entire book was so interesting, and yet it's not even like the highest point.
Right.
And so I'm anxious to talk about the next two books, which I know we're saving for later. I have a few English notes that I'll definitely share once we go through episode 3 at the end of the book. Especially about even, I really like, I'll talk about this now for just a little bit. I really like the structure of Brian Jakes' introductions, whether it's a poem or whether it's this unchaptered two-page segment about Orlando the Axe, you know, and that repetition of Orlando the Axe was following the fox.
I like and that, too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The way that sentence flows is just, it's made to be repeated over and over and over again. And this little by little, like a wipe in a movie, how, you know, there's Orlando the Axe, he's in the scene of beauty, and then it pans and, you know, sun glinted off his massive double-headed battle axe. You know, there's nothing behind him but desolation and loneliness. He's following the fox. You know, two sunrises ago, he passed the fox. You know, this is what he did. He's following the fox. And it's just this brilliant build-up to this adventure, because the first few chapters are kind of slow. You know, if you didn't read the original book and this is your first indication, you know, your first introduction to the Redwall series, you might put it down because the first, you know, chapter, nothing much exciting happens. It's just John Churchmouse talking. But because you know that there's this force that's coming, there are two forces at play already, being Orlando the Axe and Slagar the Cruel, you know, it keeps you anticipating the moments to come, and Brian Jakes surely delivers.
Yeah, I agree.
So, that just leaves book two, where I'm sure the chase is going to continue, and we have to contend with another invasion. Yay! But, yeah, like I kind of mentioned earlier, we're going to see Cornflower pretty much coming to her own. Not that she wasn't an important character in Redwall and didn't have her own moments, but, yeah, even when her husband's not around, she knows how to take care of business.
Yep, I think Matameo gets most of his mischief-making from her, because Matthias really, we don't see him doing a lot of these joke things. I think she's the one with the sense of humor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's actually a really good point, because Matthias, even in the first book, he's very serious. He knows what role he has and what he wants to do in life, where Cornflower is more just like, oh, well, you know, we live in this peaceful place, and I think Cornflower actually has a little bit more personality to her, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, as you mentioned, the Abridged series, every time Matthias does try to make a joke, he gets slapped.
Yep. Yep. I love that Abridged series. I'm not sure if we can advocate for things on this podcast, but the Heather Redwall Abridged is fantastic.
Yeah. Alright, so folks, thank you for coming on. We'll see you in a couple weeks for the next episode.
Awesome.
Bye.